and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Volkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 624.
The Halloween episode.
Yeah, the post-Halloween episode. And Lord knows this week has been pretty scary. This has been a crappy week. So it's a kind of appropriate epilogue.
So we are actually, speaking of epilogues, we are wrapping up our coverage of Green Lantern Dark, because the final issue 7, has come out, wrapping up the story. So let us just get right on into it. Let me make sure I have the creative team on screen. It's at the end, isn't it? The map. Yes. Writer, Tate Bromble. Artist, Werther Daladera. Colorist, Giovanna Nero. Letterer, Tom Napolitano. Cover, Werther Daladera and Giovanna Nero. And then we, of course, have Ash Padilla, who is assistant editor. Editor is Andrea Shea, and senior editor Andrew Marino. And of course, the credit to the Tangent Universe going to Dan Jurgens. Got to pay the bills. I'm still to this day curious how these credits work. Do they negotiate them themselves? Do they have to have a lawyer? Because it took Neil Adams and company working for years to get just the Siegel and Schuster credits granted to them. So is it part of their contract when they first sign on with DC? How does this work? And what determines, like, if you mention the word Tangent Universe, do you have to give Dan Jurgens a credit? I'm so curious about how that works.
Yeah, it is interesting to the logistics and the underpinnings of how all that pans out.
Yeah. We pick up, of course, where we left off. Green Lantern is seemingly dead. Gar is, you know, kind of beating himself up about it, apologizing for his role and everything. And Damona and the kids are flying back to her little area. Rini is out in the Emerald Space. They called it Oa, right?
Yep.
I'm pretty sure they did. Oh, Emerald Realm of Oa. Yeah, yep. There it is. And basically explaining the nature of this power and how it works and what its sort of origins are in the Tangent Universe, which I don't think we've gotten this explanation before. I think I remember the mystery behind Green Lantern's power in the Tangent Universe being not very explained. So I think this might be the first time, but somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. Anyways, basically, it's the willpower of all living things to persist, because, as they say, everything in the universe needs to die, but everything in the universe also wants to live. So it's explained through multiple pages, and that sort of intersperse through this story as we cut back and forth between these conversations. That the creator or whatever, who created the universe and everything, also created Yurik Bakhtum, or however we're calling this celestial worm. And it was sort of the janitor for darkness, sort of, you know, keeping creation in balance, but there needed to be more. And so, you know, although everything dies, it was this unique thing to see life fighting for itself to survive, to go on. And it wanted that something out there to protect and hone that spark. And that's essentially what the green flame is in this universe. It's the spark of life willing to persist and go on, gave a wielder. That's essentially it. While this is all being explained, we see, of course, Batwraith and Gar discussing things, and this is when Grundy makes a reappearance as he was promised Green Lantern's body. We see the kids in Damona's world and Lunette learning that her brother has been working for Damona. We see Damona packing to go off to Mars after the Celestial Worm destroys everything. We see the kids confronting her and them just being suddenly and very quickly brushed aside and sent to the children's service areas to, you know, have more darkness fed into the area. We see, Solomon Grundy, you know, trying to get the body of Green Lantern from Gar and trying to lure Gar with him because I've heard your cries. There's no point. Come to Grundy, that sort of a thing. We see Batwraith conversing with his own corpse, asking kind of about if the Celestial Worm comes and everything is destroyed, is my curse over? While he's thinking about all of this, somebody comes in to light the candles around the corpse and talk about how she knows who this corpse was, that it was Batman. You were one of our great heroes and people forgot about you, but I didn't forget. I think this is important because it's also mirrors, Batwraith and Gar are sort of learning the same lesson that Rini is, but for different reasons in the story. So she says our stories and who wrote them, the heroes that defied all odds to vanquish evil, because if we forget how often the world ends and how often we overcome it. Maybe that's it. The future is held together by commas and ellipses, not by any one of us, but by the sum of all of us refusing to let this story end. One candle to another, on and on, holding back 1,001 nights. So Batwraith, overhearing this story, obviously gives him some hope. Rini is kind of fighting back against the lanterns that she is meeting, talking about how she wanted to die, how she, that first issue where we met her going into the diner, she was basically treating herself to one last drink, one last meal before she offed herself, that she wanted to die. And then the other lanterns kind of tell their own stories, except for the traditional Tangent Universe Green Lantern, who doesn't really tell her story, so we don't unfortunately get to learn enough about her. But she does make a joke I like, where Rini says, "You're saying we're all just as depressed," and the Green Lantern responds, "I heard it's a lack of vitamin D."
Yeah.
They're talking about how, you know, this is the power of life, and she says, "Do you still want a refund on this flame?" And you know, if I die, I'll be stuck here with you, right? Screw it. I choose life. And she can start sensing that her friends are still out there and that they haven't given up. And she's worried about it being too late and they snuff the lantern. But they tell her to borrow willpower of all of the living and just be careful of how much and from who you take. Because now that she knows that she can sort of spread what she's pulling from around, not just a single person, but the light of lots of people across the planet and plants and animals. It's at this point that Batwraith sets up what seems to be, I think, we'll circle back, some sort of temporary mystical shield to at least hold off the Celestial Worm for now. And then Rini lights up, starts fighting back, forgives Gar real quick, and then goes to take on Damona. And she starts dealing with Damona. So Damona does what she said. Her power draws on darkness and everything that she's generating and all the misery and stuff. So because she's using everything she can to help bring on the Celestial Worm and fight back a suddenly who knows what the hell they're doing Green Lantern, she is drawing on more power, and she took it all in for herself, thus making her the one and only target of the darkness that the worm is actually after. Batwraith gives up the ghost. and the shield falls, and the celestial worm cometh and devours Demona and nothing but Demona as it passes harmlessly through the rest of creation. We see later on that the Batwraith's corpse walks out into the light and disappears. And then we see that, you know, the sun is shining again on the people we have met throughout this series. New England is shining, and, you know, all of us, you know, the kids are off telling the story of the Green Lantern and everything, and talking about, you know, new heroes who we will hold back the night. And it's basically saying that, you know, the Tangent Universe is back in terms of will we read more about it? Probably not, but it's back in the swing of things, and these characters still exist out there, and there's new teams and people being created and fighting evil in that universe, and the fight goes on because we see Rini along with Gar just kind of cruising the countryside fighting things together.
Because at the end, but they free New England is free, but the rest of the world is still needs work. So
yeah.
It was pretty good. Again, I'm on a roll with my vibe, so not that this was a big stretch, but I certainly kind of assumed Gar wasn't really 100% truly betraying Green Lantern. Him immediately kind of regretting it and still deep down being pro Green Lantern. That was cool. I guess if there's a negative, it's just the fact that, like, we have talked about a lot, it's this whole thing about Rina having to be taken kicking and screaming all the time, just to the same, seemingly to the same point. This was a little different because this is like this is kind of like the Cher from Moonstruck moment, like snap out of it, kind of like smacking her across the face. It's like, come on, get your head out of you know what? And then we got to get having her, her recent predecessors there trying to like give her the rundown on stuff. But it kind of is the same journey in a way that she's been on, and she's kind of been on a roller coaster. It's like, okay, now she's down, she doesn't care. Okay, now she's up, and she's accepting that she's part of a bigger picture, but yet she doesn't really believe and goes up and down, up and down, up and down. So it's kind of the same narrative structure, I guess, with her. But, I mean, so if we were going to see her again, we certainly hope that she would not be going down into these pits again, or else it would get real old. So if she has finally turned 100% turned the corner this time we mean it, then this is a good ending, I would say.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think with Jessica, for example, it makes sense that we keep circling back to her fears and her anxieties and stuff, because for a lot of people, that's not something you just purely overcome. You live with and you manage. So if we were to see like the end all be all of her anxiety, I'd honestly be a little concerned, because it really should, like, the severity to which it remains should be obviously different. But I would hope that it's just sort of always a part of her, because it's a unique thing about her as a Lantern in terms of overcoming fear. With this, I think it's a little bit different, because it feels like those types of things where, like, you're in therapy or talking to a friend or a family member, a real deep conversation, and they make a point, and that point feels right. And you're like, you sort of recognize the logic behind it and how that would make sense, but you don't really internalize it, but you keep hearing something similar to that effect. And then that one time that one person says something just that right way, and it finally clicks and makes some sort of a change in you. I feel like that's what happened with Rini. And I fully agree with you. If they circle back to this again afterwards, then that cheapens this moment.
Yeah, I mean, you would like to think this is, you know, the final step along her journey to, as far as coming to grips with who she is, and not necessarily, certainly not wanting this and having to suffer when she first got it, but realizing it's a bigger pros and there's cons in the big, you know, she's got there's bigger picture things at play here. And that she really isn't all alone, though she feels all alone. kind of like that, kind of like Luke's like, I can't go on alone. It's like, well, you're not alone. And that's the whole point. And not just because there's other people around you that you're kind of overlooking and you're not seeing the connection with, but because even the people, everybody who has come before you and has traveled that same path, they're still kind of with you too. It was fun. I thought it was fun. The Grundy stuff was, you know, I guess we had to circle back to Grundy, you know, Grundy trying to get his revenge on Green Lantern. And then I did think it was somewhat, I liked her response when all of a sudden when she comes back full power and it's like, oh, help me with my curse. And basically he's like, help yourself. I got bigger fish.
I thought that was interesting too, because what are we saying about Grundy moving forward in this universe? So the likelihood will circle back. I doubt it, but raising the dead was the power of the previous Green Lantern. She was able to temporarily raise the dead so that they could, you know, I guess fulfill their finished business or something to that effect. But it only lasted 24 hours. That's how they incorporated the 24-hour limit into the universe and stuff like that. I'm wondering if they're setting up something for Grundy to fulfill that role in the Tangent Universe, if they're trying to turn him into a hero.
I enjoyed it mostly because it was, well, it made sense from a storytelling perspective because she literally had bigger fish to fry right now. So she really didn't have time to wait around and coddle him. I was like, all right, I was like, I don't have time right now to deal with this. It's like, and it's not like he necessarily, well, forget about like, he didn't really deserve, that was not high on anybody's list of things. Oh, you know that I'm kind of quote unquote mastered my power, that I need to come back and take care of you, because I'm not saying she wouldn't potentially do it. I mean, she seemed to be pretty good at kind of like forgiving people and rallying the troops and everything else. I liked it on twofold. One, because it's realistic. It's again going back to different things that it's, you know, thoughts of kind of like prompts in your head. It's like at the end of Spider-Man 2 when Harry finds out that Peter's Spider-Man and he's all like kind of like wrecked and ripped up inside. It's like, listen, I don't have time for this. There's bigger things going on than you and I. So it's like, tell me where did he take Mary Jane? Mm-hmm. It's that kind of thing. It's like we have more important things to worry about and we can iron out the other things later. It was, I thought it, I mean, Kane's still a dick. He's still kind of a dick. See, she forgives him. She forgives him too. I would say Rena forgives him too. But he's kind of was a dick, and he was always a dick, despite supposedly doing it in his mind for the greater good. I thought he was. That's a character that I would be very happy not seeing again.
Yeah. It's unclear what's happened to him, because at the very end, we see Lunette, you know, being the one telling the story to a crowd, and he's nowhere to be seen. So, but you know, that's one panel. So who knows? I don't know. I liked Bat Wraith's involvement here, just fighting hard enough until Green Lantern can do her thing. I like the idea of if they both draw on specific powers, then just make her fight hard so that she can be the one that's the target. So that was very interesting. Him just, you know, the Celestial Worm just phasing through the planet. I was like, well, that's weird. But other than that, I liked it. I like the art in this. You know, it's gotten more defined about what's actually happening on the page in most cases. There's still some artistic flair when things get pretty intense, but I think I'm better. Either that or I'm just better at interpreting what the artist is doing on the page as the series goes on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's one of those things where for the most part, again, with the artwork, I enjoyed it. I think there were the angular aspect of the way like Rena's drawn and things like that. It's like, it's not really my style of art overall, but again, like we talked about previously, it does flow with the nature of the story and the kind and the world that they live in and the story beats and elements that keep coming back regurgitated, so to speak, that I think it does work. Again, it's not like I really would want to read a book that looked like this regularly, but for what this was, I think this, I think it was appropriate.
Yeah, I agree. I think the series as whole, the issue wrapped the series as a whole pretty well. I definitely do want to read it again when it comes out in the collected edition, which it looks like it's getting a hardcover as opposed to a softcover. So
still puzzling. It's like you would think that would have been maybe the smarter way to go with this to start with.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing I'm on the Penguin Random House website and it's showing as $34.99 coming in February, end of February, February 24th. So, but it's getting a hardcover. I will be getting this in a hardcover. I like this enough to have it on my shelf. And I definitely, I mean, I'm buying it. Of course, I'm going to read it. But like, I'm anxious to read this again in a trade paperback format to see if some of those issues, especially towards the middle, like we were talking about, where we felt it was dragging on, actually reads a little better as I'm reading the whole thing at a pace, as a collected story. So that, you know, part of the slow pace is not its release schedule.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
But that's it. I liked it. I'd be down for another volume. But I don't know that especially talking like sales, numbers like we have been, I don't know that it would be getting one, but it would be interesting to see the Tangent universe again. I think that we might see that.
Yeah, I think there's probably a really good chance that will happen. There'll be a time and a place when I think that some of these characters, or at least the world, will continue. It would make plenty of sense. You could do tons of stuff. You could have some of the mainstream, the regular continuity Green Lanterns end up in that universe and things like that. There's lots of things you could do. So it would be weird, based on everything we've seen before, that these characters and or this world wouldn't be seen again.
Yeah, for sure. All right, that's all I got for this. Recommendation: read it if you haven't. I think it's worth it. This one's hard to say because lots of things get a hardcover and then later get a softcover. But something like this, I think it's possible, kind of like Green Lantern Earth One, where I think the intent could be a hardcover and they won't do a softcover. I don't know. I feel like that's possible, especially with the artist being Werther Delladera. And the popularity of Something Is Killing the Children and stuff like that. I think the point of having a nice hardbound artistic book of Werther Delladera's art with DC might just be the appeal behind that, to sell more copies and charge more for the individual copy because it's a hardcover. I don't know that'll get a softcover release, but if it does get a softcover release and you guys are worried about getting it in hardcover because of the $35 price tag behind it, then yes, I would wait and pick up a soft cover because I think it's worth having and reading.
I don't think I will buy it, but that's not surprising because I don't buy any recollections of any of these things, whether it's Venditti, whether it's, it would have to be a really special edition for me to want to go out and get it, or especially only really predicated on it being a story that I really, really like. And it's easier to have it in one volume again, to be able to go back and read it as opposed to have the issues or whatever. So yeah. Those are my circumstances. And so I enjoyed reading it. It's certainly better than some of the other things we've been reading lately, over now that we've seen it from beginning to end. But I do not think I will be buying this anytime soon.
All right. What's next?
Let's do, I know we're both going to do a little bit of what we've seen, Chad infringing on my copyright. But before we go to even down that road, so this is kind of a slight tangent. Instead of what have I seen, this is what have I read, even though I'm still reading it. So the jury's still out on the end, but I'm going to assume that it isn't going to be Venditti'd at the end. So I would still recommend this. And I mentioned this to Jim, that I've been reading, and I'm about 75-80% through, The Book of Quint, written by Ryan Dacco, which is essentially it's a prequel to Jaws and it's really cleverly done. Maybe it's for some people that might be too on the nose, too nostalgia driven, but essentially everything we've heard about Quint's background, almost exclusively, not 100% exclusive, but almost everything coming from that post dinner scene with him, Hooper, and Brody in the and the orca talking after dinner about all, everything that happened to him and the major events and why he has this scar and that scar and Indianapolis. And this is essentially Quint's story telling his entire story. And I don't, and again, I don't know if it's going to, I haven't gotten to the end yet. So I don't know if it's going to literally get, take you to the events of Jaws, whether even if it's just the beginning of Jaws, but it's certainly chronicling everything from like the '40s through the late '60s. So if it doesn't take you directly to, you know, carryover events, it's really, really well written. And it, and Jim and I were talking about this. I think that there was like 2 years of research done on this book, and to kind of make sure some of these things mesh well. I mean, from an accuracy perspective, related to sharking and the boats and everything else, and it recontextualizes some of the events of Jaws, but in a way that I think will, for most people, they will find satisfying. It gives you context to why, essentially, why are there sharks? Why is Amity kind of prone to large sharks? There's a legitimate reason why, given in this book, why that is the case, and why the sharks were never a problem before, but now they kind of, but as time went by, they kind of became a problem because they moved closer to shore. There's some really, I think, a logical, well thought out and probably well researched explanation too about why this is the case. And it does get very good character piece for Quint, who probably, I mean, Quint isn't always the most likable character in Jaws, but it's kind of hard to argue he's not the most interesting. And this book kind of just adds to it. So I would highly recommend that. I have the Kindle version, which is kind of weird because it's one of those versions. When you download it, I can't read it on my Paperwhite. For some reason, it's not compatible with my Kindle Paperwhite, so I literally have to read it on my Kindle Fire, which is kind of weird, because obviously, A, that screen's not really designed for reading the way the Paperwhite is, and I've never really done a lot of bulk reading other than, you know, download. That's perfect for when I've downloaded comic books, you know, but the Kindle Fire is awesome for that. But I thought that was kind of, that's the only book I've ever bought, you know, for my Kindle that I can't read on the Paperwhite. But I would highly recommend that, especially if you're a Jaws fan. I think it really, it's very, again, it's not just that it hits the beats and you understand this and everything that Quint references, but it gives you good context for things, and it's just enjoyable. I mean, so I would recommend that.
I actually have been reading as well. I know I mentioned buying Andy Weir's The Martian, as well as Project Hail Mary. I did read The Martian, finished it, liked it. Definitely saw some of the differences in the movie, but I liked it just as much as I liked the movie. And I'm about a little over a third of the way through Project Hail Mary, which is coming early next year, the film. The two main characters are very interchangeable in terms of tone and the way their humor works out. There's sort of dry wit and stuff like that, even the face of danger. So I, you know, obviously the actor, what's the name of the actor in Project Hail Mary?
Gosling.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling is going to, you know, portray a character differently than they did in The Martian. But if Gosling gets the same sort of notes from the character, from the source material, from the script, what's his name in The Martian? I'm not good at actors' names.
Matt Damon.
Yeah. Yeah. That Matt Damon. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at actors' names. Matt Damon, I don't know that we'll get a Matt Damon feel from him, but the characters are pretty much interchangeable, in terms of how they speak and view things. It'll be interesting to see. I'd be also very curious about how, like, the directors and everything and set deck and all of that stuff interprets the tone of an Andy Weir book into things. But I think it's definitely making me look forward to the movie more. So you all already know one of the things that's on my list for what we're looking forward to seeing in 2026.
I know that's just around the corner too. Before we delve in more and specifically, let me do this quick before we roll into the stuff the stuff that we've actually seen, which won't take long either. I did see, and I was going to throw this at the end, but since we talked about it ahead of time, this segment, so we might as well do it. The Scream 7 trailer dropped kind of late, considering the movie comes out at the end of February, and we finally just got the first trailer for it. So anybody, I mean, if you've watched the Scream 7 trailer, it's clear, and this isn't a spoiler from the perspective that we already know he's in the movie, along with a lot of other people whose characters are technically dead, which makes you wonder how they're going to juggle this. But if you watch the Scream 7 trailer, it's clear that they're really pointing fingers at Matthew Lillard's Stu Mocker. And the Stu Mocker vibe off of, you know, his house is now a B&B, and lots of references to, you know, the killer. One of the killers anyway says that, you know, they grew up with Sydney, is like where we grew up. So I think they're really trying probably too hard to make you think that Stu is one of the killers, which I would love him to be, because even if it's not in this movie, I would like him to come back and be a killer, because he's probably got one of the most questionable deaths of all the killers in the series. But I think it might be a misdirect, because unless they want, the only way it's not a misdirect, if they're trying to hide it in plain sight, it's like, well, it can't possibly be this because it's so obvious and they're tailing it to us. But I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if going on a Hail Mary, just because I've been hot lately on this road, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the killers turns out to be the mother of Sam and Tara Carpenter, because we know she has ties to Billy Loomis, which means she may very well have known Stu Mocker too. And she kind of always, even though she was never on screen, she kind of acted like, what we know of her, she seemed like a future ghost-faced killer down the road, and she would have issues to not be happy with Sydney, because she would know that Billy was in love with Sydney, even though he was screwing around with her too. So that's my theory, that the Carpenter mom might be one of the killers in this movie. So that's it.
All right, what's next?
Well, why don't you talk about what you have seen first, and then I'll just go through a quick few on my list, and then we can roll into the last topic of the evening.
Yeah, I started watching Yellowstone, and I'm now already to the point where I'm a little over halfway through the fourth season. A lot of people recommended it to me. It's definitely, you know, it's meant to be this quote unquote realistic depiction in some ways, but it's definitely not. There's lots of violence and over the top, you know, stuff that happens in it in terms of cattle ranching and all of the stuff that they do with the livestock commissioners and stuff like that. You know, basically going to war with local militias and having shootouts in the street and stuff like that. But it's cool. It's kind of like, definitely got some messages to it, about, preserving land and natural spaces and keeping things as they are and stuff like that. There's a lot to portray life on, like, Indian reservations and stuff like that as well. So I don't see it as this, you know, big preachy type show or anything like that. I don't take it as that, but it's been entertaining. Kevin Costner's great in it. And, the supporting cast is doing fairly well. I think some characters are written a little weird and I wish they didn't focus so much on certain things, like, you know, one of his sons, Casey, is constantly having sex scenes with his wife, which is like, fine, you know, husbands and wives should be loving and stuff like that. But it seems like an unnecessary amount. It's like every time they're alone together, they're hooking up. It's just weird. Don't get me wrong. She's a beautiful actress, so I don't mind seeing those scenes. But, like, you know, still, in terms of narrative and storytelling, do we need to see it every 5 seconds? Whatever. But it's a fun show. I've liked it. I just mention it because it's rare that I watch something new. I like to rewatch content.
That makes sense. Few things from a theatrical perspective. Last week we saw Shelby Oaks, which it was more because, to be honest, it wasn't anything that called to us in our schedule, so that's why we picked that as the horror movie. By written and directed, I believe, from Chris Stuckman from YouTube fame. It was, I'm trying to think the thoughts that come to mind. From a production value perspective, it's a very well shot movie. It looks as much as horror movies can look, beautiful, quote unquote. I think it kind of does. Story wise, it's not, you know, it's kind of like a been there, done that. It's you know, it's similar to, you know, there's a little bit of Omen mixed in with maybe, you know, some other, it's like some possession movie kind of concepts. It's certainly not something that somebody needs to rush out and see in on the big screen, but it was entertaining, and I think it was well cast, and I think for the most part it was well acted. So on that level, I think it was, I would give a tacit thumbs up, I would say, for that. As far as on TV, I did finish, I knew it was coming. I didn't realize it had dropped yet. That the last season, the recent season of Star Wars Visions, which is the anime inspired takes on Star Wars, which again, I'm not an anime guy. So the whole, even though not every single episode is drawn and animated exactly in the same style, there's unique styles to pretty much every episode. But it was moderately entertaining. Like I said, I prefer the Tales of the Jedi and things like that when they do those shows, and the animated Star Wars shows, not so much Visions. But if you like anime, if you like the previous seasons of that show, I'm sure you'll like the third season. I also watched A House of Dynamite on Netflix, which was really there's a lot of buzz about this when it dropped about 2 or 3 weeks ago, which was the movie about the missile and there's reasons in the movie, whether you believe it or not, but there's reasons in the movie why we don't know where the missile specifically came from. We know it came from Asia. We don't know exactly specifically where it launched from, but there's this ICBM being launched, and it becomes clear that it's going to hit the continental U.S. And as it plays out, you know that it's going to hit somewhere between Michigan and Chicago, with Chicago eventually being the target. And it has a pretty good cast, but some people like the ending, and some people I think didn't like it and went, go back and watched it a second time and appreciated it. It's a very Vin Diddy like ending, just in the sense that there's not much of an ending to it. It's essentially the same 40 minutes of story being told from two or three different points of view. So you see it from one perspective, but characters interacting in a certain way, focusing on characters A and B. Then you kind of see the same events happening. Now you're focusing on different characters, but if you're looking for a resolution to either figure out where it came from, did this happen? What happened after this? If you're looking for things tied up in a nice, neat bow, that's not the movie for you. Rebecca Ferguson is, I think, probably the standout in this movie, not just because of her acting, but she plays one of the more competent characters in this movie. Because some of the criticism about this movie is the fact that it seems like almost everybody doesn't know what the hell they're doing, or everybody's indecisive, and like the few people that are maybe decisive are almost like caricatures, maybe to a certain extent. The premise is really interesting, and that's what drew me in, and I think that's what drew a lot of people in. And it's Kathryn Bigelow, you know, Academy Award winner Kathryn Bigelow, who did the directing. But I don't blame necessarily the directing. I don't think the script was as good as it could have been. And this week it'll be Predator, whatever the hell the movie is named. I don't remember anymore. Whatever this Predator movie is, that'll be tomorrow's movie. And I think that's it. And now we can move into something we just talked about last week, but now we're going to talk about it some more.
Yeah. I'm scrolling through to get the information I need. Did you see Star Trek IV is now off the table?
I saw the headlines. I never clicked on any of the articles because I think most people with a brain in their head knew Star Trek IV was dead for a long time, regardless of anything we heard to the contrary. It's like, first of all,
kicked down the road for so long.
And the last one we know didn't do well, which we've talked about it. It was almost assuredly was more marketing, as in the lack thereof, and a poor marketing campaign when they did put trailers out, that certainly hurt that movie, because when you saw it, the movie was a lot better than the marketing campaign indicated that it would be. But the reality is that movie didn't do well. Even Into Darkness didn't do as well as people thought. It's kind of pretty straightforward at this point. Star Trek has never really been a particularly viable theatrical franchise.
Yeah.
But the fact that, yes, it's been so long since the third one, and then it's the fact that there's been three or four different restarts on this project. Oh, it's back on. And then you kind of knew it was doomed the last time because they made that announcement that, hey, it's back on. And like Chris Pine and somebody else were like, that's news to us. Because nobody ever bothered to talk to them about it, which I guess you don't have to on some level if you're contractually obligated to do it, but it would be kind of considerate to do. You don't blindside people like that. But yeah, I don't think it's another one of those missed opportunity things. I really would have liked to have seen whatever they were going to do originally when they were bringing Chris Hemsworth back as his father. They were going to have these, but they thought but that was going to be the, I think, cost prohibitive because I guess, which is kind of funny because let's be honest, you know, Chris Hemsworth is fun in almost anything that he's in, but he's not somebody you need to really pay a ton of money for because he doesn't put asses in the seats unless he's doing Thor. So the reality is, it's kind of funny that that was supposed to be one of the reasons why it's like, oh, just the cost of bringing everybody together to do this, and it was going to be some time travel thing that basically brought George Kirk back. James T. Kirk was going to interact with his father, who obviously we saw in the first movie die pretty quickly, but was a good captain, as it's well noted in his brief moment at the bridge in the chair. So I would have liked to have seen that, but then we started seeing so many different versions of what was going on. It kind of became kicking the can down the road so much. It's kind of probably good that somebody finally shoveled dirt on it.
Blade times 10.
Yeah. Except Blade is more what Freddy versus Jason became, in the sense that it was just pre-production hell and 8,000 different scripts, and there's what it could have been, and people trying to except there's no excuse really for Blade. You have a friggin' story because you already made three movies. You know what the basic story is. It's like you're complicating things that don't need to be complicated, and that's the reason why. But you are correct in the sense that rumored an event almost seemed destined to just be quietly exit stage left, and let's forget that we even talked about it.
Speaking of things you wish you could forget to talk about, I'll fully admit here and now, Blade Trinity is a guilty pleasure movie.
I was watching bits and pieces. Oh, I know what I was watching. I forget who was doing it. It was a reaction video. Somebody was watching it. I don't know if it was Real Rejects. I don't know. Somebody was reviewing for some strange reason. Blade Trinity, and so I watched a little bit of that, and it's like that kind of reminds me. I almost forgot Triple H was in that movie, but yeah, it does just remind you how annoying Ryan Reynolds is, generally speaking. I mean, because again, it's that persona that he plays in like 90% of his movies, and now it's just gotten to the point where you tolerate it when it's Deadpool, but other than that, it's like you just go away. But
yeah. So the thing we want to talk about tonight is lanterns. There are some more lanterns news that came out sort of because there's two big parts to this. One that Mark doesn't know. But we'll start with the Hollywood Reporter because this all happened. They put out a newsletter on October 3rd titled Heat Vision, and it was talking about the end of the Peacemaker season 2 finale. And it says the finale will mark the last of the Gunverse we'll see until June's Supergirl. So our friend Will over at Green Lanterns podcast reached out to the Hollywood Reporter and said, in your Heat Vision newsletter on October 3rd, you guys report that Supergirl will be the next thing. And then it just cuts off because that's what's in the screenshot. But we know because of re-Reddit. They replied to him saying, you are quite the eagle-eyed reader. Yes, we expect lanterns will now come after Supergirl. Will responds, says, that's crazy. Are you guys going to put that out publicly at some point? Can I share that THR expects? And then it cuts off. They say, if you want to mention on your podcast, feel free to refer to what we reported in the newsletter. And if you want to say that you checked with us to confirm, that's what we were saying in the newsletter. So he posted the screenshot of this back and forth with the Hollywood Reporter. And that is where the news, if you have heard it out there, that Lanterns is now coming after Supergirl, which is expected in June, that is where it came from. It actually came from Will reaching out to the Hollywood Reporter. So that's the actual news bit in terms of the actual content. Before I get into that, do we want to the rest of the story that pertains to us? What do we think about it supposedly being shifted? All this does is confirms what one source or reporting company thinks. So, you know, it's not necessarily huge news, but it got spread around like it. So the likelihood that it could be after Supergirl, what do you think?
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, this is kind of surprising on one level since it's been going on for like a week. We all know his impulse control problems. Somebody at this point should have just asked James Gunn whether this is true, and the odds are he would have told you whether it's true or not, because he seemingly can't just not tell you stuff, even though we should at times. But eventually someone will ask James Gunn. Somebody will bring it up. If it's not on Twitter, or it'll be an interview somebody will ask him, oh, by the way, there's this rumor going around, and somebody will say, yes, in fact, this is the trades are pretty reliable. So the reality is they heard this from someone, a reliable source. It's probably true. Now, why is it true? That's another story. Is there something in Supergirl, which is possible, because Supergirl is going to be a little more quote unquote cosmic than Superman was, and certainly more than friggin' Peacemaker was, and as far as forget about the other dimension stuff, as far as the actuals going into outer space and things like that, that's not really in the Green Lantern. They didn't tread in Green Lantern territory in Peacemaker, but they could in Supergirl. So there could be a plot reason or something that might connect or play better if people see Supergirl first. Would I prefer this to be the case? No, because there's always a chance Supergirl is not going to be particularly well received, or may not. It's probably almost guaranteed it's not going to make as much money as Superman. So if you start getting like the first hint of something negative going wrong in the DCU, that puts more pressure on Lanterns to succeed, and then it might. I don't know. I still not just because we want to see it, and it's been, but it's also true, to be fair, that Supergirl's been done for a while. Other than they're doing some reshoots for it, which is common, but Supergirl was done before Lanterns was. So I guess from that perspective, it really wouldn't be shocking if they decided, hey, let's just release this first, even if they're somewhat interchangeable from a storytelling perspective, and one does not directly connect to the other. I could see why they might want to have Lanterns come out after Supergirl.
It's ironic you mentioned the sort of virality of the way this sort of news spreads, because that brings me to part two, which is how it affects us.
See, I'm good. I've been so good lately. I don't know what's going on. I mean, maybe it's the cosmic balancing out of how shitty like most of 2025 has been in the last month has been for me. But the tremor in the forest has been really strong.
So, you know how when, like, especially on social media, one source will post something and then the other accounts that do the same thing,
yep,
basically copy and paste it word for word as their announcement on their social media account. So basically it's just a long string of dozens of accounts posting the exact same wording.
Yeah, from one source, which may or may not be reliable to begin with, but all of a sudden it catches like wildfire and everybody is talking about it as if this is being reported all over the place, when it's like, no, it's actually was reported by one person, yeah, with one source. Yeah.
So this happens on Twitter. DCU Brief at DCU Brief says Lanterns is not expected to release until after Supergirl, after June 2026. Source THR, they tagged the Hollywood Reporter, speculation clarified by Lantern Cast. They tagged us, and I wasn't paying attention to Twitter for like an hour or something like that, so I didn't see the notifications popping up on my phone. And by that time, that hour had passed, a dozen plus, 20 plus or something different accounts all were quoting us as the source instead of Will.
Them's the breaks. Suck it, buddy.
I made sure to, you know, tweet to as many of them as were popping up at the time. But obviously, it's like it just kept coming even afterwards. So I just, you know, did the best I could. But I said, as much as we love the attention after being on the air 17 years, I think y'all mean our buddy Will over at Lanterns Podcast. And I tagged him to make sure he got the due credit. But we got some new followers over on Twitter specifically because somebody sourced the screenshot wrong.
That's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
So ironically, we broke Green Lantern news, everybody.
In some way, shape, or form. So,
no, Will does a lot. I know he's in contact with a lot of people over in sort of the Hollywood sphere. Like, he's a big Lord of the Rings fan. So, I know he's done, like, I think press junkets for the Rings of Power show.
Yeah.
So, like, he's got contacts and stuff over there. So, I definitely recommend, if you guys are really heavily following Lanterns specifically, I think in terms of news for that show, your best source is going to be to follow Will Obviously, we'll talk about the show as we hear news and stuff like that. But if you're looking for someone discussing actual news or supposed news or rumors or whatever about Lanterns on a fairly consistent basis, I would send you guys over to Will over at Lanterns Podcast. And he doesn't do like, you know, the whole hour and a half thing or hour that we do and, you know, Podcast of Oa and Emerald Echo and all of them do. He actually does like more short form content where his episodes, including the ones he releases to Spotify, are less than 5 minutes, if that, just kind of giving you the nitty gritty real quick. So I definitely recommend if you guys haven't heard of him and checked him out yet, then you're definitely into learning more about Lanterns as we wait to see what it becomes. Will's your guy.
Yes, got to give credit where credit's due, but we'll bask in the glow of his success as well.
Yeah, we crossed the 1.6K mark because of him.
Because we
was 1.5, so we gained about 100 followers or something off of that. Thanks, Will.
we need to retire, man.
But that was fun. But it kind of sucks that it's taking a while. Like I'd rather them take their time and like especially like get the CGI and post-production right as well and really dial that in as opposed to rush something out and maybe get a slightly worse end result. But I was looking forward to seeing it as the next thing. And as a result, I was looking forward to sort of the promotional hype train behind it building up towards the beginning of 2026. You were talking about how crappy 2025 has been. Just, 2026 sort of starting off with sort of, you know, the press buildup and the publicity buildup as we got closer to Lanterns was something I was looking forward to. But that's all going to be spent hyping Supergirl. And I hope Supergirl doesn't overshadow Lanterns in that respect, because it's the big screen or whatever, and they don't put as much effort and marketing behind Lanterns as a result. But who knows? Maybe they'll put in like a teaser credit or something at the end of Supergirl that teases Lanterns.
Yeah,
that
is a possibility. There could be something that directly ties. It depends. Maybe they have high hopes. For Supergirl, and they think, well, yeah, we should have a direct tie, or we could take this opportunity to put a direct tie in, even if it's a post credit scene to point towards the Lanterns TV show. We'll see. I mean, there's certainly no evidence that they're doing this because there's a problem with the show and they have to go back and either do massive reshoots or something's not working. They tested it and it didn't work. That could be the case, but there's been, as it was pointed out, it was kind of like almost like flip and you miss it kind of thing. It's like that he well picked up on the fact that it would be really easy to just go, hey, wasn't that after the fact? Like, hey, wasn't that supposed to come out after? And this was supposed to come out first. But again, it hasn't been officially confirmed. But obviously somebody has, you know, the source is probably fairly reliable. And at some point soon, you would think, we're going to know. I mean, they really can't. Not that they ever gave us a target date, launch date, premiere date for Lanterns anyway. So that gives them more time to play around. But if it's not going to come out, you know, between now and June, between January and June, then they probably should tell us soon and probably they should lock in a premiere date. It doesn't mean that it's going to premiere in November. It could just premiere in September. Yeah. So September is probably the safe bet. If it's not going to come out before Supergirl, it probably won't come out. It'll probably be September, I would guess.
Yeah, I think it's also the reason I'm believing it is because the Hollywood Reporter is not saying we think or they say we expect, and then they tell Will it's okay to tell people you had this conversation with us and that you can use us as the people who confirm that we believe this. So
which is still covering their, you know what, because it's not because it's not like, yes, take it to the bank. We trust us. No, they're not saying that. They're just saying, if you want to say that the word on the street is Lanterns is now going to come out after the Supergirl movie, because a Hollywood Reporter said that. If you want to say that's where you heard it from, you can say that because it's factually accurate. It's factually accurate that we said that.
But now, see, now I'm like imagining a post-credit scene where, like, you know, at some point during the movie, Supergirl loses track of Lobo or, you know, something like that. And then the post-credit scene is we see Lobo encountering a Lantern. I think that would be that'd be cool.
It'd be Hal Jordan slapping on the Ben Gay.
Or because of the relationship, they keep throwing Guy and Lobo together in various situations for some for obvious reasons, given their personalities. But and their history in terms of JLI and stuff like that. But I just think Guy would be the obvious choice. But in terms of teasing Lanterns, I think I would prefer to see Hal or John.
Yeah, I think if they're going to tie it into the show and they're going to have a post-credit scene, it absolutely they should. They should have it be, and I really, and depending on, again, we, and this is not something we're not going to know until we see the show, really, that if the show begins, like, let's say John does, let's say John gets the ring in the beginning of this, in right in the beginning of the series, and it's not that he already has it, but he's kind of, no pun intended, green, that if he's not already a Green Lantern, then if there's going to be one, it would make sense, it would be Hal. If it's not going to be Guy, it would have to be, it was going to, it would, it should be Hal, because unless, again, unless Hal's technically not on active duty or he's semi, you know, he's on semi active duty, and then it might make sense, and then it might make sense where you could name drop both of them. It's like, we should contact Hal Jordan. It's like, well, you know, Hal's kind of winding down. There's, you know, but there is this, you know, his replacement is kind of, he's available. Or he might be available. So, yeah, his name's John Stewart and things like that. But it depends if people are going to see them or not, too.
Yeah. But that's all I got. You got anything else?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
Lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter. Like us on Facebook, #GLcast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean. Wherever you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or a text, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.